up, Mags? Are you there? Good morning. This is Out of Line, 1340 AM, Fox Sports Radio. Thank you for joining us on this lovely Sunday morning. First morning of NFL football. Thank the football gods that it is back. Brian's running a little bit late. He had a rough night last night, but he'll be in studio with us shortly. I'm joined today by Chris Magnum Chapman, the one and only. What's going on, brother?
How you doing, man? Getting ready for some football. Finally, man.
I mean, you know, NFL is back. We've all been waiting for it. A lot of great matches going on this morning. What are you looking forward to this Sunday morning as well with this NFL season starting up today?
Well, obviously, you know, I don't have any rooting interest in any games today. I haven't bet any games, but I like to usually wait and see week one. But what I am looking forward to is how my fantasy team does. I've got, I think I've got a team that you know, in my money league, the last couple of years, I finished third. 2 years ago, I finished second. I lost in the championship game to a guy who had a red hot Todd Gurley last year. I don't think anybody was going to beat that team. And this year, I feel like I've got an even better team. I've got a couple of really good receivers. I've got Tom Brady, so I think you can never go wrong when you've got that guy at quarterback on your fantasy team. I do worry about my tight ends because I'm stuck with garbage O.J. Howard and Jack Doyle, who combined.
How did you end up with those two guys?
Because I took a bunch of good receivers and better running backs. And you know, when it came around to me, I had Kyle Rudolph in queue, and the guy right before me took Kyle Rudolph, and I was like, well, I'm not going to reach for a tight end now because there's no good tight ends left on the board. So I waited and waited and waited, and eventually those two guys were what was there. And it's like, oh, God. I'm hoping O.J. Howard has a I'm actually playing him over Jack Doyle because I have to see Andrew Luck throw the ball a little bit before I have any confidence in anybody that he's throwing to. But I do think that O.J. Howard could develop a little bit of chemistry with Ryan Fitzpatrick, who will get the start for the first three games, and I think it'll be the first four games with Tampa because I think Jameis won't come back until after the bye week. But we'll see. I mean, I like my team, and you know, today that's what I'm looking forward to. And of course, tomorrow evening, although it's late afternoon for us, I'm really looking forward to the Jets and the Lions.
Jets, baby, you know how it is. Brian's not going to like that too much because we know what's going to happen tomorrow. We're Jets fans. We have to be excited. You know, we got to talk a little bit of trash, especially when we have a Detroit Lions fan in the studio with us. So you know we're going to give Brian some slack tomorrow. I know we don't talk too much about betting, but I'm going to throw it out there real quick. You did mention the Indianapolis Colts. They are one of the biggest underdog betting teams, on the board today. Majority of the money is all over the Bengals. I know everybody's worried about Andrew Luck. What is he going to do? Is he going to come out firing on all cylinders or not with the injuries that he's had? But they're only favored by one, and almost 80% of all the money being bet is on the Bengals. That's crazy. But going away from the NFL real quick, I do want to talk about the amazing game that we had yesterday, UNLV versus UTEP. UNLV finally came out, stepped up, continued to run the ball the way they started the season against USC. You were at the game, Mags. You did the pregame show. What are your thoughts on what you saw yesterday?
Well, I thought UNLV played well. You know, that first drive, they were able to do whatever they wanted to. Actually, pretty much the entire game on offense, they did whatever they wanted to. But I think we all got a little worried, and we all had that collective gasp when UTEP went right down the field on their first possession, and they scored a touchdown, and they made it look easy doing so. And, you know, Kyle Loxley, he was the big star for UTEP, you know, a team that's very, very bad. You know, he only threw for 57 yards, but the problem is he ran for 119, two touchdowns, and Quadrez Wadley, who really wasn't supposed to be a factor, he had 96 yards on the ground and a touchdown. You know, he averaged 13.7 yards per carry yesterday. Loxley, on 20 carries, averaged almost 6 full yards a carry. The good news is UNLV probably won't see another mobile quarterback like Loxley, but it's one of those situations where, once again, a mobile quarterback, a guy who can run the ball, once he gets outside, he's able to cause problems. And the good news for UNLV is the fact that UTEP stinks. They're the worst program in college football right now. They've lost, I think, 14 straight games. That is the longest active losing streak in the country. They went 0-12 last year, got their ass kicked by Northern Arizona last week. So that's the one saving grace. I'm curious to see how this team responds. Because when you give up over 200 yards on the ground to two guys, to me that sends the message that same old UNLV.
Correct. The issue that we've had with UNLV, and everybody knows that, is the defense. They looked like they were going to start the season getting better. They played very, very well against USC. But, I mean, is it concerning? 265 yards on the ground. I get it. You said we're probably not going to see another mobile quarterback throughout the rest of the season the way we did yesterday. But, I mean, 265 yards. We're going back to the Swiss cheese defensive line here, aren't we?
Well, that's what worries me. It's not so much the what Loxley did because, you know, I predicted Loxley would be able to run the ball against this defense. What worried me was what Quadres Wadley did. And him running for nearly 100 yards. And let's be honest, if UTEP's not down the entire game, I mean, what was the score? Was it 38-10 at the half, I think it was?
Yep, 38-10.
If it's not 38-10 at the half, and UTEP isn't forced to throw the ball, I mean, they threw 29 times. They only completed 11 passes, two different quarterbacks. But what worries me is what Quadres Wadley did on only seven carries. This guy rushed for almost 100 yards on seven carries, and to me, that's absolutely unacceptable because this was a guy who yesterday, his career long was 32 yards. He ran for 45 yards on his first carry of the game. His first carry of the game, the guy ran for 45 yards. That's unacceptable. And I think I love UNLV. I'm a supporter. I'm always going to be behind Coach Sanchez. I think we have reason to worry a little bit with this defense, because when you give up that many yards on the ground to a garbage program who's behind, mind you, they're down the whole game. I mean, it was 14-10 after one, but then UNLV put up 24 points in the second quarter. That game's over at the half, but they allowed these guys to just run at will against them, and that scares me if I'm a UNLV fan going forward. I'm going to be 100% totally honest. And guess who just showed up? Mr. Barry Sanders himself.
Mr. Barry Sanders is in the house. I'm going to ask you one more question before we get Mr. Barry Sanders back on the mic and let him do his thing. Real quick, my question to you, Armani Rogers, again, only 6 of 13. Yes, 119 yards passing, 9.1 average, 3 touchdowns yesterday. Pretty good QBR, 98.1. But is it still a cause for concern?
No.
He's running the ball. He had 10 carries for 103 yards. Shouldn't he be passing the ball a little more?
No. I'm not concerned at all about that. I think he's completing the passes he needs to complete. They were able to run for over 400 yards yesterday. There was zero reason for him to air it out. If Armani Rogers is throwing the ball 25 times, that's a problem for UNLV because that means they can't run the ball. I'm all right with him completing about 50% of his passes. Look, if he had thrown 25 passes and he completed, say, 9, I'd be a little worried. 6 of 13, he connected on a couple long ones. The very first pass he threw of the game, a 51-yard touchdown pass. I'm not too concerned about that. What would concern me is if they get behind and he's forced to throw the ball and he puts up these bad numbers. It's a lot different when you're playing from the lead and when you're able to run the ball. If they get to a situation where he's forced to throw the ball, I think we're going to find out what we've got with Armani Rogers. And right now I'm not concerned because, look, he runs for 100 yards. And he Lex Thomas had 127. Charles Williams had 80. Xavier Campbell had 72. They ran for over 400 yards. Zero reason for concern there.
Yeah. All right, guys, listen. I was at the game. Jose, you're in California. There's no concern about Armani Rogers. Matter of fact, I don't even believe we're talking about the offense. The concern is defensively. And after watching the game yesterday and being there, UNLV has defensive issues. They gave up over 250 yards on the ground to this team. And after watching USC play another team yesterday, I realized Stanford allowed 3 points total by the Trojans. Their offense is inept with this freshman quarterback. The kid, UNLV, wasn't anything for him.
Yeah, but Stanford's had their number for a number of years.
Still, so, Megs, 3 points. My point is, the first three quarters might not be indicative of how good UNLV's or how bad UNLV's defense is.
David Shaw is one of the best coaches in college football. I don't take a lot of stock in that. You know, for me, the next 2 weeks are really going to define UNLV. Actually, the next three games.
How do you not take a lot of stock in 250 yards well, given up
I,
on the ground?
I do take a lot of stock in that.
On
I
a
just
UTEP
said that.
Team,
we just
on a
about
UTEP
265 yards given up is not good.
That's concerning. It's absolutely concerning.
And like I said, this UTEP team, other than their quarterback, who I think could play at a good D1 school, the kid has athletic
ability.
He
signed on to play Texas.
No question. Other than him, this team had nobody.
Yeah.
And yet, defensively, I mean, at the beginning of the game, UNLV seemed to have their way a little bit here and there. Lexington Thomas got his yards on the ground. They were fine offensively. And again, we're talking about Armani Rogers. He took care of the ball. You didn't see any kind of gaudy numbers passing. He took care of the
ball.
But
he doesn't need to put up gaudy numbers passing, though. That's the thing.
I'm agreeing with you. My point is, it is a concern defensively. We're going to see it going forward. I don't think you'll see next week won't be a telltale sign either when they're playing.
I think it's the next three games, because the next three games will define your season. You're 1-1 right now. You play another garbage team that you should absolutely obliterate. Then you go to Arkansas State. Look, I watched a little bit of Arkansas State against Alabama. Arkansas State was not impressive. I'm sorry. I mean, they did nothing. And granted, they're playing Alabama. But that game was over in the first quarter. It was over. And Alabama missed two extra points, or who knows, you know, they put up a couple more points there. Arkansas State was inept. They had wide receivers dropping the ball. They had quarterback making bad decisions, overthrowing guys when there was not a lot of pressure.
I think, Mags, I mean, you're talking
but
about...
What I'm saying is, this is a game where UNLV could go in there and beat this team. I would not be surprised if they went in there and beat Arkansas State. If they're going to do it, though, they need to shore up the run. That's the bottom line. What did we say? What did you and I say? We had the conversation. If Dalton Baker is your leading tackler, that's a problem. Guess who was UNLV's leading tackler yesterday?
Dalton Baker, 14 tackles.
14 tackles.
Again, and I'll tell you what, Dalton Baker also got ran over like three times, and he got pulled from the game once. All of a sudden, I saw him stand on the sidelines without his helmet on, and he was fine. He got yanked for a minute for the fact that he was inept tackling, and he still led the team in tackling.
That's the thing. If Dalton Baker is your leading tackler,
you're in trouble.
You are in trouble. It's not a knock on Dalton Baker. He's a fine player. He's a leader.
It's a knock on the people in front of him, their inability to bring a person down before they get to the second level. And the problem with UNLV for years is people continue to get to the second level of their defense.
That's just it. They look.
So here's the thing.
Ran the rotation.
What's going to be scary this next week against Arkansas State is Arkansas State ran for 173 yards.
They play Austin Peay this coming week, so I think they're going to be fine this week. They're playing a horrible football team, but in 2 weeks they play Arkansas State, and they should
and
be
it's still concerning.
Yeah, well, of course, but next week they got another home game. It should be another blowout. This game was concerning, watching it, like I said, from a defensive standpoint.
Well, for our first drive, you know, we were in the press box. We all were like, oh, here we go again.
Yeah, right down the field.
Zero pressure on the quarterback. That first play, he took the ball, tucked, and ran for 15 yards.
Yeah.
He didn't even have to throw the ball.
No, it was bad.
You know, and he overthrew a guy in the end zone, or they would have thrown the ball in. But still, it was a situation where I don't know if UNLV is going to see another quarterback capable of running the ball the way Kyle Loxley can. I watched Arkansas State yesterday. Their quarterback is not the mobile. He's not going to run around. His name is Hansen. I don't know. He didn't strike me as a guy who's going to be able to tuck the ball and run for 15 yards. Maybe if there's pressure and it's a blown assignment, he'll be able to tuck and run up the middle for 5-7 yards. But I don't picture Arkansas State being able to just run the ball. And it comes down to that mobile quarterback. I don't know if they oversell. I don't know what it is about these UNLV. And it's not just a Tony Sanchez thing. It goes back to Bobby Houck. It goes back to Mike Sanford. They cannot stop quarterbacks who run the ball. I don't know why. It's almost as if it's something in the water in Vegas. Wow. You drink that water and you allow quarterbacks. And what worries me is Air Force. UNLV should beat Prairie View. They should beat New Mexico. New Mexico abandoned the triple option, by the way. Now they're running a different offensive set. But what worries me is a game like Air Force, where they'll be able to just run the ball at will, no matter how good UNLV is. If they cannot stop the run, They're going to be right there in that last game of the season, sitting on five wins, needing to beat Reno to go to a bowl game. And the last season, that did not turn out well. I don't want to have that pressure. I want them to have six wins before they get to the Reno game.
Well, we'll see. I think they're going to be 6-6 this year and be bowl eligible. I think that their offense is exciting. It's fun to watch, and I think we can see that. But then again, we could easily see them under 500 again. I just don't know. And like you said, there's no way to tell at this point in the season. But watching USC again yesterday, I understand David Shaw's a great coach. I understand Stanford is a very good team in the Pac-12, who aren't impressing me again this season to this point so far anyway. I don't know, Mags. I think that I think we're going to see a very porous defense again this year. Will it be better than last year? Well, come on, man. How could it not be? Listen, we got to take a break.
The reality is we're not going to know anything about this UNLV team until week four.
I would say we're learning each week. I think on the road at Arkansas State.
Well, that's week four.
Right, and that's when we'll learn something about the team. I think New Mexico, I don't think it's going to be as much of a pushover as you think, but
they
think they'll
be. Score on the very last drive of the game last year to beat them. And New Mexico didn't even complete a pass.
Yeah.
The quarterback, he only threw four passes. One was intercepted.
It's going to be an interesting season. Like I said, I think offensively they're going to be fine, and defensively is a big-time question mark. But I still think, like I said, I've said all along, I think they're going to be improved, but it's just not saying anything when you say they're going to be an improved defensive team over last year. I mean, they were absolutely god-awful, one of the worst defenses in the country. So, of course, they're going to be better. Listen, we're going to go to break. On the other side, I did get a chance after the game to talk to Lexington Thomas. This guy is the real deal. It's amazing when I stand next to him how small in stature he is, and yet on the field how big he plays for a little guy. We'll talk to him after that. Jeff Motley's going to be coming up in the show from the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. You've got the South Point 400. First time they've had a fall race out at LVMS for NASCAR. That's going to be pretty cool. Also, we're going to be giving away tickets to the 4th Annual Box Fan Expo coming up next weekend. It's next Saturday at the Las Vegas Convention Center. Really cool, of course. That precedes the Canelo Alvarez Triple G fight, which is next Saturday night, and should be a great time. So we're going to give away some tickets to that. Also, Alan Snell in the LV Sports Biz. And I'll talk to you about Jose. Appreciate you joining the show. And I'll let you know, we got a show. Jose's got a show coming up, too, later on in the week, his first debut show. And we'll talk about it. It is down the dial a little ways, but definitely Thursday night, man. Hopefully you'll tune in and find us somewhere else. I'll be producing the show. It's called Sudden Death. It's going to be really cool. Jose, we'll see you next week back in studio. We'll be back here on Out of Line right after this.
First game at home this year. How are you feeling?
Great. It was a great team win for us. We just need the momentum boost going to next week.
So tell me, last week you started that game so strong, three quarters. Obviously, you wore down a little bit in the fourth quarter, but to play against a Power 5 team that well, how much confidence did that give you going forward, preparing you for this week and beyond?
No matter who we play, I always have confidence because I know the type of player I am, regardless of who we play. But it was a great experience playing against those guys, most of those guys, next-level guys. So it was a good experience playing against those guys.
Aside from the obvious, what makes you so special? I mean, obviously not an imposing guy. You've been dealing with that crap your whole life. Mm-hmm. And you come out here and you just prove it week in and week out. What's it inside of you, Lex? What makes this happen?
I'm driven. It's nothing that you're going to do that's going to stop me from wanting to help the team win. I'm a team person. So if I'm doing going to help the team, if I got to run harder to help the team, I'm going to do it. So it's nothing nobody's going to do to stop me from helping my team.
I don't think you're surprising anyone this year. You got all these preseason accolades. Are you expecting once you get into conference play, especially, a lot of the trash talking is going to start because Lexington Thomas is kind of the guy this year in the Mountain West at the running back position?
I don't really worry about what everybody else say, but it's going to be a great experience playing against those guys in Mountain West. It's a lot of great teams, a whole bunch of great teams. All the teams got great defenses. It's going to be great playing against those guys. It's going to be a challenge.
This year, this team, what can we expect moving forward? 1-1 now. A lot of people say next week's going to be an easy game. I know you guys don't look at it that way, but you got a whole season in front of you. What is different about this UNLV team than the ones we've seen the past couple of years?
Our energy. We are driven. We're older. We're all mature now. We're not freshmen and juniors anymore. We're all seniors. We're senior. We're older kids. And it's our motors. Our motors are real high. We got great coaching staff. They get behind us with our energy. And so I would say energy and us maturing
as a team. Armani Rogers now, second year at the helm. How much more confident do you feel back there with him this year as even opposed to last year?
Very confident. I felt good with him last year. Every day he gets better. I talk to him in the huddle, talk to him before the play, so I make sure his head's right. He makes sure my head's right. It's like brotherhood, so we're very comfortable with each other.
What's your goal every game? I know you want to help this team win, but your personal goals inside of you for Lexington Thomas to help this team win?
I want at least 130 yards rushing every game. That's one of my goals.
You got it today.
Yeah, that's the goal that I always have because that's going to help the team. I'll score touchdowns, obviously, but 130 and like touchdowns, I guess.
Last question. Two games in so far. I know it's way early. Is this team good enough to make a bowl this year?
Yes, we have all the talent. We have a great coaching staff. We're good. We're ready.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you.
Blazing brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. A Hail Mary from Centennial Hills Hospital. Two happy hours every single day. And it is, of course, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. We will be there starting tomorrow night, every Monday night through the 2018 NFL season, celebrating Monday Night Football. We'll be giving away replica jerseys. We've got wing parties, giving away free wings all the time. It's a great time. Get there early. Get a table. Be there tomorrow night, man. Looking very forward to it. And, of course, two pretty exciting games tomorrow night in the National Football League. We'll talk about those in a minute. But I'll tell you a couple things. There's a lot blazing going on. What a funky day yesterday. How about the Kentucky Wildcats, man? I mean, 31 years since they've beaten Florida. I mean, it's like the way Florida would feel when they beat Kentucky in basketball. I mean, it's huge. 31 years, and they exercised all the demons at the Swamp. They came away with a 27-16 win over Florida. And again, it was their first win over the Gators since 1986. Mags, think about this. The last time Kentucky beat the Gators, I was getting ready to graduate from Michigan State University, and Ronald Reagan was in the White House.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. And, you know, Dan Mullen, the new coach in Florida, he's got a lot of work to do. It's very obvious. And I think what we're seeing is Florida State, and Miami, they've kind of fallen off a little bit. You know, Florida State struggled. Did they lose yesterday, actually?
Florida State,
I know they were beaten by...
I'll have to look, yeah.
But Miami was boat raced by LSU last week. Yeah. Who cares what they did against Savannah State? Just a disgraceful.
Yeah, they were destroyed.
You know, but you know, I think USF looks like a pretty good team in the state of Florida. Central Florida also a pretty good team. But you know, it's weird because I think for Kentucky, Florida beat Samford 36-26. Wow. Way to go. Yeah. They escaped at home over
Samford. Well,
over Mike Samford.
Yeah. You know, the bottom line is a huge win for the Wildcats, man. They were going crazy in the locker room after the game. It was pretty cool. Somebody else is blazing. You recognize this voice, Mags. This is a guy that is blazing right now. His team is blazing. You said you weren't shocked about the win. There were a lot of people that weren't. I got to say, I was surprised. But when you look at all the circumstances, it's not overwhelmingly surprised. But recognize this guy.
Well, that's what we needed to see. And going into halftime, I told him, I said, look, if you would have told me that this game would be sitting where it's at right now, you would take that. And I said, now the second half, we said that we still can make a play or two and win this game. It's not going to be a high-scoring affair. Our good players had to make some plays, and obviously number one came up big.
Number one he was talking about is N'Keal Harry, who is a Biletnikoff Award candidate this year. The guy's unbelievable. He's unbelievable. But
I watched him in week one. They played Texas San Antonio, and that guy had an unbelievable touchdown run where he went all the way across the field. It was about he basically caught the ball. He ran about 75 yards to score a 30-yard touchdown, and it was, you know, I was impressed with Arizona State week one. I wasn't impressed with Michigan State, but I didn't want to overreact to what I saw last. I said, all right, week one, Michigan State, they're a good team. They'll get out the jitters. Arizona State, who cares? They beat the Roadrunners of Texas San Antonio. Well, Herm Edwards can coach. You know, and that's the thing.
What makes it so blazing, though, I mean, we know he can coach. He's done it for a while, but it has been 10 years since he has coached, and over 30 years since he's coached at the collegiate level.
And that was at San Jose State.
And it's a whole different breed of athlete. It was at San Jose State, but compared to 30 years ago, it's a different mentality. It's a different pay scale. It's a different mindset to be able to go in there and fit right in. Now, again, you can't jump the gun. It's so early. But that is a monstrous win for the program and a monstrous win for the decision makers who decided to go out on a limb and hire Herm Edwards. Well, wow, is all I can say.
The telltale sign will be not right now, because he's got someone else's players. The telltale sign will be when he gets his own players in there and we see what he can do with those guys, because recruiting is a huge, huge part of
it. It is. And he surrounded himself with a pretty good cast of characters.
Yeah, and look, if he can go into Los Angeles, if he can go into San Diego and pull out, you know, those five-star kids, he's going to be able to he's going to have success. If he's not pulling in those five-star kids and he's getting the 3/4-star kids, it's going to be tough to compete with USC, going to be tough to compete with, you know, Chip Kelly once he starts getting going at UCLA, Willie Taggart, or not God, Willie Taggart anymore,
UCLA,
but, you know,
UCLA look like
Mario
garbage.
Cristobal at Oregon. You know, they'll be able to pull in some, you know, but I think Arizona State, I think they're going to be on the better side. I certainly like what I've seen out of Arizona State more than what I've seen out of Arizona.
Well, of course. And
Kevin Sumlin, wow.
No, I'm not disagreeing with that. Really surprising. But again, this is a huge win for him going forward. And when you talk about recruiting, the name alone is going to get him into the living rooms of people. And then it's going to be his ability to sell. And Herm Edwards has always been a motivational type guy back to his playing days. I mean, he's always been a leader. And I think you're going to see the Sun Devil program really turn around well. Another Blazin' Mags, and I'm going deep today on Blazin', but how about Oklahoma? You're talking about this kid, Kyle Murray. I mean, dude, a first-round draft pick by the Oakland A's. It reminds me to a small degree of a John Elway type of thing. This guy has an unbelievable arm. He's as accurate as can be. 19 of 33 for 306 yards, 3 TDs. He did throw one pick, but also 2 rushing touchdowns. And that little combo with one of my favorite named receivers in the country, C.D. Lamb, 7 receptions, 146 yards, a touchdown. Oklahoma has now won 32 straight wins over non-rated opponents. But I'll tell you what, this kid, Kyle Murray, you know, it's way too early to say this, but looking at his ability, his raw ability with Oklahoma, this guy could win a Heisman Trophy. And would that be something? Baker Mayfield leaves as a Heisman Trophy winner, and this kid comes in and wins it the next year. He's got all the talent in the world. This kid is going to play at the next level for sure.
Well, I'll tell you who I've been impressed with the first 2 weeks of the season, Virginia Tech.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have the one big game on October 6th. It's at home. They host Notre Dame. They avoid Clemson. They don't play Clemson at all in the regular season. Watch out for the Hokies.
Okay. We'll look out for them. One more Blazin' that I got to get in is, I don't know how many of those of you watched the Women's U.S. Open Championship between Serena Williams and Naomi Osaka yesterday, but this is an up-and-coming superstar who is 20 years old. It was tarnished by some stuff that I thought was crap, and I'm wondering if out there anybody thinks I'm sexist because I put this story when she is the first Japanese player, men or women, to win a Grand Slam major, a Grand Slam event, a tennis tour, so it's huge. But the reason I put it last is not because I'm sexist. I put it last because there's more to it, and it's going to lead us into fact this. But this was Naomi after the win. And you talk about a humble superstar. I really like this girl. I love her game. And I think we're going to be hearing a lot more from her as time goes on.
I know that everyone was cheering for her. And I'm sorry it had to end like this. Well, it was always my dream to play Serena in the U.S. Open Finals. So I'm really glad that I was able to do that. And I'm really grateful I was able to play with you. Thank you.
Wow. Talk about homes. Mags, I don't know if you saw it. Serena Williams went nuts. And as a matter of fact, it's going to lead us into fact this, and we'll talk more about it. But hit me with the intro to fact this.
Fact this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Yeah, it is a fact that Naomi Osaka did win the U.S. Open. A game was taken away from Serena Williams, a point and then a game, for her antics. And the bottom line is this. She lied. She flat out lied. And here's how she lied. Listen to this and see if you can pick up where she lied. You'll also hear her coach in here with this, but you tell me where she lied.
We don't have any COVID. I know you don't know that. telling you it's not, I don't cheat to win, I'd rather lose. I'm just letting you know.
Well, I mean, I'm honest. I was coaching. I mean, I don't think she looked at me, so that's why she didn't even think I was. But I was, like, 100% of the coaches on 100% of the matches. So we have to stop this hypocrite thing. Sasha was coaching every point, too. It's just, I mean, and it's strange because this chair umpire was the chair umpire of most of the finals of Rafa, and Tony's coaching every single point, and he never gave a warning, so I don't really get it.
What do you think of that, Mags? The bottom line is she said, here's what she said. We don't have signals. She started off saying there's no signals. Her coach said, and you saw him making hand signals. They clearly have signals. He said, all players do it. All coaches do it. We got to quit the hypocrisy. So my point is, it's not a big deal. Everyone does it. She shouldn't have gotten called out on it. Maybe she shouldn't have gotten warned. A lot of people do it. My point is, she was warned. She should have moved on. She said, for a point blank, I don't cheat. I wasn't coaching. That is a lie. Are you not seeing the lie?
Oh, it's very blatant. The problem is, and this is, and as great of a player, and remember, I said last week that Serena could be put in the discussion as the greatest athlete of all time.
All time.
Whenever she loses, it's never her fault. She's always the victim. The same with her sister Venus. They're always the victim when they lose.
Yep.
What pisses me off about this is Serena Williams knew that this girl on the other side of the court idolized her. Grew up wanting to be her.
Tarnished her victory, Mags.
Absolutely stole this girl's moment from her. I don't care if she apologized later and it was kind of a half-hearted apology. She stole this girl's moment.
And Mags, the bottom line is, she's like, I just called you a thief. You called the judge a thief.
Listen,
I'm sorry.
No judge or referee or umpire ever owes anybody
an
on
apology.
The pitch. You know, the only exception was that poor
guy. Herm Edwards gives you some advice. Here you go. Listen.
Stay humble and hungry.
That poor guy from the Tigers who had the perfect game stolen from him, he is the only athlete in the history of sports that an umpire owes an apology to.
Correct.
That's it.
I remember that very well.
I'm sure you do.
Yes, very well.
Armando Gallardo.
Very well. Here's the bottom. Yeah, that was. Dude, that brings back nightmares. I mean, that guy changed the history of his life. That was a defining moment that was taken away from him. But here's the deal. You're 100% right. This is crap. And I thought it was a poor exhibition by her. I'm sorry that she said, oh, quit booing her and stuff. The bottom line is, yes, I'm not going to say that it was sexist. She turned it into a sexist thing. Yes, men, like a guy like John McEnroe, verbally used to abuse the seat official all the time and didn't get this. But here's the deal. She was given a warning. Then she broke her racket, which is like a delay of game.
Yep.
She was taking a point away. It's not like you get a redo. Now that you've got a point, you get another warning.
Yeah.
You don't. Then it was the third strike. She told the official he was a thief. She yelled at him, humiliated him on a international stage.
Yes.
He did what he had to do to take control, to say, I don't care who you are or how big you are. You're getting penalized, and I don't care that it's the USA championship. You are losing and forfeiting a game here. Boom. End of story. And you know what? It was upheld by the commissioner.
Yeah,
end of story.
The reality is Naomi Osaka kicked Serena Williams' ass
yesterday. She did. Flat out.
That's the bottom line.
Flat
Serena
out.
Williams got her ass kicked by Naomi Osaka.
Flat out. Listen, we got to get to break.
No, we don't. No breaks. We're done.
Oh, we're done with breaks. Oh, you took care of it. Good deal. Give me a favor. Get quickly Jeff Motley on the phone, if you would. We'll talk to him about the LVMS. And I want to tell you, though, as far as the U.S. Open and Serena Williams goes, as Magnum said last week, one of the greatest athletes, maybe the greatest athlete all around of all time. It is amazing what the ability she's done. She was outplayed yesterday. She didn't on purpose take away Naomi Osaka's thunder. She wasn't trying to do that. Understandably, you're upset. You know, to take away the game, it was the fifth win that they gave. The fifth win in the second set that was given and awarded to Osaka after that penalty. It's catastrophic. I mean, you know, it's very hard to recover when you're being outplayed. Now you are down a game where you have to win two games in a row. It was a lousy situation. And I think that Serena Williams should not have had a game taken away from her. But she should have been told that, look, the next time you do anything, told the fans what's going on, told everybody what's going on, the next time you do anything, you are going to have a game taken away from you. I just think, it's the U.S. Open Final. Chrissy Evert said it as well. It was almost too severe at that point. I think you got to give her a warning. But I still do not believe it is a sexist thing. I think this guy, Carlos Ramos, who was the seat judge, he's got a pretty good reputation from what I understand. He's had a few issues here and there, but he's got a pretty good reputation. So I'm sorry, man. That, in my opinion, was a lousy thing Serena Williams did, and it definitely hurt and tarnished what Naomi Osaka did, which was incredible. Listen, we're going to go out to the phone lines right now. We got Jeff Motley on the phone out at the LVMS. Jeff, appreciate you joining. And the first time, South Point 400 next Sunday, another big weekend, two race weekends now. Is this going to be every season from this point forward?
That is the plan. Yes, it will be. Appreciate you guys having me on, first of all. And yeah, we're excited. You know, it's been 20 years in the making, having a second NASCAR weekend here in Las Vegas, and it's finally here. And, I hope they get that race in today in Indianapolis, and everybody can start getting loaded up and heading to Vegas. It's going to be a jam-packed weekend. Next weekend, we're going to start Thursday night with the dirt track, the K&N race, Star Nursery at 100. We're going to be pretty fortunate to have Christopher Bell and Brendan Gaughan both running in that race, and Kurt Busch, Kevin Harvick, Clint Bowyer coming out to sign some autographs, and then move into the big track on Friday with the trucks and Xfinity on Saturday, and then the big cup race on Sunday to kick off to the playoffs.
It's so exciting. I mean, people that have not been out to LVMS for a NASCAR race, I so strongly urge you to get out there and check it out. It really is. It changes your perspective as a fan to really feel the reverberation of the cars, to see what goes on there. It is absolutely an amazing thing. And the coolest thing is, Jeff, and I tell people this all the time, there's just not a bad seat in the house. If you can grab a grandstand seat, and even if you get on the infield, there's all kinds of viewing opportunities. It's just an overall great experience and worth every penny of it, right?
Well, it's fantastic to come out there. I mean, you're right. You feel the noise. You see the speed. The neon garage is an opportunity to go down into the infield of the track. You can be really up close with the drivers and the teams. You can watch them prepare the cars. Drivers come over, sign autographs. We have live music performances. Drivers come in and do Q&A sessions with the fans in there. At the end of each race, we have the victory lane there in the neon garage. So that's kind of a one-of-a-kind experience in the NASCAR world. And then you're right. I mean, we've got a great facility with phenomenal sight lines to be able to watch the races. And, we look forward to having a huge crowd of close to 100,000 people out next Sunday.
Jeff Motley, the Vice President of Public Relations for the Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Appreciate you joining the show. Right now, Jeff, people to get tickets, and in your opinion, if you haven't been out and experienced this before, what package do you buy for you and your family?
You know, I think your best bet, honestly, is to come out and get a weekend package, because then you can go to all three races. If you're talking about for your family, kids 12 and under are free on Friday, they're free on Saturday, and they get in for just $10 on Sunday as long as they're with the paying adults. So as far as bringing your family out, you really can't beat that opportunity.
It is a great value, and one other thing is, I have my little secret routes. When you're coming from the Las Vegas area, greater Las Vegas area, any suggestions on how to get there and to avoid traffic, because it can get a little bit packed on the 15?
Well, I think as far as coming, it depends on where you live, and if you know your way around town, in the South Valley or in the central part of the Valley should just come up Interstate 15. But if you live on the east side of town, then use Nellis Boulevard and come up Las Vegas Boulevard. And if you live out in Summerlin on the west side of town or up in Centennial Hills, use the 215 and come around. It'll drop you in about half a mile south of the speedway.
A lot of other transportation, too. Public transportation will get you there. And I know the South Point's hooking people up, getting them back and forth to the track. All kinds of ways to get there. Packages still available. Definitely check it out. I look forward to going on. I'm just psyched that we've got it twice a year now. Again, Jeff Motley, Vice President of Public Relations at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Always appreciate you joining the show, Jeff.
Appreciate you having me on, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Be down there on Sunday. Mags, you were at the rookie game yesterday, going on today. Last night you had to leave UNLV, as a matter of fact, for that. And give me the intro first, and then I want you to run nightcap for us.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. Right. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Nightcap, and Mags, how were they looking yesterday, man? Kind of exciting. We're already back in gear.
Yeah, you know, they got out to a quick start. It was 5-0 at the end of the first period, and then Colorado made a pretty good comeback. They made it very interesting there in the third period. I mean, they had a 6-4 advantage the final 2 minutes of the game. You know, there was a penalty call on the Golden Knights. Didn't necessarily agree with it. I thought it was a really bad call. They called interference. The puck was at the guy's foot. Guy just got lit up by a check. But you know what? Look, refs, you know, these guys are all going through the growth as well, because they're not NHL level refs. These are guys coming up. So for them, they make mistakes. But I was very impressed with Erik Brännström. You know, he plays with a lot of confidence. He had an assist on an absolute. He didn't get an assist when he should have, but he also had a goal and an assist. He played really well. Nicholas Hague had 2 goals. Another young defenseman, Zach Whitecloud's stick is very. You know, notice the guys I'm talking about are all defensemen too. Zach Whitecloud's stick is really good.
He is.
You know, it's funny because he's different than Hague and Brännström in that he's more of a defensive defenseman, which sounds funny, but a lot of players now coming up play both offense and defense. But I was very impressed. I thought Tyler Wong played well. He took a beating. You know, he's a guy, but he fights, and he told me after the game that he fights for every square inch on the ice, and you got to love a guy who has that attitude. And his coach actually made the similar comment in the press conference. Rocky Thompson, who coached him in Chicago last year, said that Tyler will fight and fight because he feels like he has something to prove and he wants to fight for every square inch on the ice. I love that. I love that. I like watching him play. He's probably my favorite guy of all the young guys because he's gritty and he's tough and he fights. And if you go out there today or on Tuesday, number 80, Tyler Wong. He's the guy to watch for because he is a fun player to watch.
Today or Tuesday, a couple more opportunities to check it out. It is at City National Arena. Definitely get down there and check out the rookies. Really, really good time. And we're back, man. The Vegas Golden Knights, reigning Western Conference champions after their inaugural season. And they're already lacing them up, the rookies now. And we're less than a month away from getting to see them on the field. Pretty darn cool. And a quick segue from the Vegas Golden Knights into some other hockey.
I can't forget, though, first preseason game is a week from today.
A week from today. Like I said, we're already a month away from just a little bit over a month away from the NHL regular season startup. I can't believe we're already back. And a good segue as we're talking about hockey, LVSportsBiz.com Minute. Alan Snell is on the line with us, and he wrote an article about hockey, but it's UNLV, their club team. The popularity of the sport of hockey that the Vegas Golden Knights have created, this atmosphere, has spilled over. And UNLV playing at the City National Arena have been the beneficiaries of that, as they are playing in front of capacity crowds there, and they're even looking for a bigger facility. Alan, you wrote the article about it. The one thing, it doesn't seem like, though, you know, you're talking about like $15 million or something to get them to be a non-club team and an actual varsity sport. That's a big stretch from right now. I think they have to come up with $500,000 cumulatively, correct?
Yeah, right now their annual budget is $500,000. And a lot of the players spend a lot of money themselves. I think $3,000 each per player. And it's a lot of money, especially on the travel. expenses. But as you mentioned, to actually seed a varsity team, they have to come up with $15 to $20 million
a lot of money
just to have a varsity sport. And keep in mind, with Title IX, there has to be a women's sport that accompanies the new men's sport, which they're looking at possibly lacrosse. So,
they couldn't just go, okay. You know, I was going to say they couldn't just get a woman's goalie, and then they would that would satisfy that? Because for $15 million, man, you're not getting two sports.
Listen, maybe the women's lacrosse goalie can play goalie for the men's hockey team.
that's what I was saying, but it's pretty cool. You can get down there, and Alan, it's going on right now. UNLV hockey is up and running, correct?
Yeah, I think they have their first two games against Colorado later this week. Yep. I believe it's Friday and Saturday. And I went to several games last year. You know, it's a lot of fun. There's one parent that brings like this Winnebago. He's like a one-man tailgate action. He sets up Winnebago in the parking lot at City National Arena, and there's a lot of hockey fans who love UNLV hockey. And you know, it's amazing, Brian. This is turning into Hockey Town USA out west here in the desert. A lot of the Golden Knights, the rookies having a great weekend, and UNLV hockey looking to get to their varsity level, maybe in the next 5, 7, 10 years or so.
Yeah, you know what? I think it's a good possibility simply because of the popularity. I think that we'll see the hockey grow, and I think you'll see a lot more talent coming. Who would want to come and play hockey in the desert in Vegas? Alan Snell, LV Sports Biz Minute, we appreciate you, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Always great to chat, Brian.
All right. We're also talking about the Alonzo. Okay. Well, don't forget this weekend, and give us a call right now. This Fox Sports studio line is 702-876-1340. We will give two pairs away right now to the 4th Annual Box Fan Expo. It is coming up next Saturday. It is before the Canelo Triple G fight. It's at the Las Vegas Convention Center, and we're going to give away our final two pair tickets here, $30 a piece. So you're winning basically a $60 value right now, 702-876-1340. Mags, with the last bit of time we have, we got to talk NFL, man. It is week one, and there are a lot of intriguing matchups going on. The first matchup on Thursday was very intriguing between the Falcons and the Eagles. That game was kind of what I thought it would be. The Eagles winning in a close battle. Matt Ryan, a horrific interception in the end zone late in that game, which is typical for Matty Ice. To me, Chris, and I've said it before, the most overrated quarterback I feel in the National Football League. Yes, he did win an MVP. Yes, he did take his team to the Super Bowl. One year, I'm going to grant you that. But here's the deal. If you take out Matt Ryan's best NFL season, which was that year, and his worst NFL season, throw them both out, his numbers are very pedestrian. They are average at best, and we don't look at that for some reason because he's had a 10-11 year NFL career. Granted, made a lot of money for a split second, was the highest paid player in the league, but he's not all that.
Well, you know, I don't want to say he's the most overrated quarterback in the NFL, because look, there's a lot of overrated quarterbacks in the NFL, including one who plays for your team.
They're that highly regarded. No, I don't think Matthew Stafford's overrated. I think he's rated right where he should be.
Well, he's overpaid. That's for sure.
Well, they're all overpaid.
But you know, there's a couple of intriguing matchups today. You know, Minnesota and San Francisco to me is a game that really stands out because it's the dawn of a new era in Minnesota. They're thinking Super Bowl. You know, they had a pretty good run last year.
That
then
guy, Kyle Youssef, who's going to be their running back, watch out for this guy.
Kyle
man.
Rudolph, the tight end, yeah.
No, the running back. San
Dalvin
Francisco's
Cook?
Running back.
Oh.
That Youssef guy's Kyle. You know what I'm talking about?
Well, their starting running back blew out his knee.
Correct.
He's done for the year.
And this guy is, I'm telling you right now, I'm just letting you know, pick him up in your fantasy leagues, guy. He catches the ball out of the backfield, and he will open things up for Garoppolo. I like this kid.
Yeah, and I think San Francisco is going to be improved. You know, it's going to be interesting to see. Game in Minnesota. To me, another game is Jacksonville at the Giants. Look, Jacksonville, show me. You need to prove it to me again that you are the team that went to the AFC Championship game. Kansas City
great
and Los
battle.
Angeles.
Ramsey and Odell Beckham, man.
That's
how good of
good.
A battle is that going to be on the edge, man?
Kansas City and the Chargers. Because Kansas City, they jettisoned Alex Smith, and they're going with Pat Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Never was a fan of him. We'll see. And then the other one.
Max, before you run through these real quick, the Kansas City Chiefs, I agree. Patrick Mahomes, he does have a very live arm, but you want to talk about at the skill position, Tyreek Hill
is really
Kareem
good.
Hunt, brother.
Yeah.
Both those guys are as skilled as the running back and wide receiver position as there are in the NFL. And you know why I'm talking about them? They're both on my fantasy team.
Yeah,
I think that's pretty good.
They can be a quarterback's best friend.
Huge.
And then the other game that I'm really looking at is Seattle at Denver. I think Seattle is on the decline. I think they're getting close to the end of the line. But for Denver, they've got the new quarterback, Case Keenum. I've always liked Case Keenum.
Hard worker.
If he can be a good to above average quarterback, or an above average to a good quarterback, watch out for the Broncos because their defense is loaded.
Well, as always, man, they've got the third best defensive player in the league.
You know, they won the quarterback with a 65% Peyton Manning.
Well, Mags, real quick. No, I understand. One of the intriguing matchups that I'm surprised you didn't mention, the Green Bay Packers hosting the Chicago Bears with the new Khalil Mack.
I think it's a little early for those guys
Here's what I was saying. A week and a half ago, Aaron Rodgers was sleeping great. We get to open up against Chicago. We play really well against them at home. We're going to kill them. He woke up 3 days later in a cold sweat with nightmares. Like, oh my God, I'm going to have Khalil Mack after my ass twice a season. And I got to start the year with that after coming back off an injury-laden season. I got to play Khalil Mack in my first game. And if he really wants to go deeper, Khalil Mack should have been a Green Bay Packer. They had two first-round draft picks and decided not to use him. The Raiders would have jumped on that over the Bears offer.
Oh, absolutely.
And like I said, Mack,
they just couldn't pay him.
Three things they could pay him. Three things you need to win in the National Football League. You need a knockdown superstar quarterback. You need a line to protect him. And you need an edge rusher to go get the other team's quarterback. The Raiders had all three elements. Stupid.
Well, we'll see how that turns out for the Raiders. But for the Packers, they also have to worry about the Bears rookie linebacker Roquan Smith.
Oh my God, out of Georgia.
I absolutely love
that kid in Georgia.
And
I do too.
You know, I mean,
love him.
If he can get going, I mean, there was a little bit of a issue with him getting in the camp, but man, oh man, if this guy turns out to be
the next
great Bears linebacker.
Those two together on defense is really scary. The defense could be good enough to get Mitch Trubisky farther than he would get on his own. Mags, we're out of time. Lions, Jets, what's the final score tomorrow night?
Jets 24-16.
I'm going to say Jets 21, Lions 17. Can you believe I said that? Hey, this is out of line. I want to thank Lexington Thomas. I want to thank Jeff Motley. I want to thank Alan Snell. Mags is always producing Jose for kicking off the show and helping me out. Don't forget Thursday night, just down the road on the radio dial. It is up a little bit, let's put it that way. The show is called Sudden Death, 8 to 9. You'll find us. I'm Brian Feldman. This is out of line. We're here every Sunday morning, 8 to 9, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM, home of the reigning Western Conference champion, Vegas Golden Knights. We'll see you next week.